Right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second or the continuation of our conditional use hearing. This is for the Hershey Trust Company, trustee of the Hershey School Trust, for the properties at 267 West Chocolate Avenue and 339 West Chocolate Avenue. We convened after the initial hearing, after hearing testimony from a couple of the witnesses for the applicant, so that tonight we expect to have the hearing, the testimony from the traffic engineer. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I'm calling the meeting to order officially. It is approximately 6:04 p.m. I'll ask Mr. Emmerich if you can conduct the roll call.
Member Zanuda?
Here.
Member Carrado?
Here.
Member Nutt?
Here.
Member Wycombe?
Here.
Chairman Abruzzi?
Here.
And there are five members.
All right, thank you, Mr. Emmerich. So the full board is present, and I would just make the normal housekeeping announcement that although it's posted within the meeting room, I want to advise all persons attending the meeting that it is and has been the policy of the township to take report of all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. Anyone who comes to the podium should make sure that we ask that you identify yourself first name and last name. That would only be necessary for public comment at the conclusion of the testimony today. For purpose for counsel and the witnesses, Mr. Mott, we would just ask you to try to keep that microphone as close to your mouth as possible so that everybody can hear regardless of where they're seated or seated in the room. And you're welcome to sit there throughout your testimony. And I think that's, we have our other parties are present. So we are ready to proceed. I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. Armstrong and he'll kind of run the rest of the meeting for us. So, Mr. Armstrong.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the chairman indicated, we're reconvening the conditional use hearing on Hershey Lumberyard's conditional use application. For the property located at 267 and 339 West Chocolate Avenue, parcel numbers 24-014-018 and 24-009-014, as well as 24-009-071. I noticed that the applicant's counsel is in the audience. I also noticed that Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, parties in this case, are in the audience. Zach, I believe your next witness is a traffic engineer, correct?
Correct.
What we'll do is I'd like to identify him, and then we can proceed. Unless there's any questions or comments from the board at this time.
Just for our architecture, the whole tree
is helping
us. I do. All right, good evening. Happy to be back in front of the board this evening. We were together, I guess, about a week ago. You'll recall that at the last hearing, we heard from our financial impact expert that was able to testify regarding the requirements and the zoning ordinance related to the financial impact of our project. And then you heard from our landscape architect who provided some overall testimony related to the development and the layout of the site. This evening, I'm joined by the project traffic engineer, Craig Mott, from Traffic Planning and Design. He is our only witness for the evening, and we anticipate that upon the close of his testimony, we would be resting our case and offering it over to any of the other parties to present whatever evidence would be appropriate, and then hopefully we would get to public comment this evening. So with that, I will call Mr. Mott. Good evening, Craig. Can you just introduce yourself to the board, please?
Sure. Craig Malad with Traffic Planning and Design.
All right. And where is your office located?
Our office is located along Crohn's Mill Road in Harrisburg.
Okay. And could you briefly just describe to the board your educational background?
Sure. I have a Bachelor's of Science in Civil Engineering from Penn State University.
All right. And do you have any professional licensures or certifications?
I do. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Pennsylvania. I'm also a certified professional traffic operations engineer, which is issued by the Institute of Transportation Engineers.
Right. Have you previously offered expert testimony in zoning or conditional use proceedings?
Yes, I have.
Have you been accepted as an expert here in Cary Township?
Yes, I have.
Turning to the exhibit booklet, which I have already handed out to the board and to the objecting parties and the township staff, I will note that there was one additional exhibit that I included with the solicitor's packet. That is our complete traffic study, including all the appendices. Tab 9 of our exhibit booklet contains the 28-page traffic study without the exhibits. I felt that the board might not appreciate having a 700-page exhibit booklet handed out to them this evening. So in the event that there is a need to look at that, that would be in the record, the full traffic study. So turning to tab 8 of the exhibit booklet, which I think just for...
So let me make sure. So you hand-wrote A5 tab 9
correct.
On this packet. Did Mr. and Mrs. Leonard get a copy of this?
I have not given them a full copy of the traffic impact study. I can provide that to them.
Yeah, if you're going to submit it as an exhibit, the parties are entitled to
it. I understand. Yes, I'll make sure that they get a copy of it.
So my understanding, the large packet of the TPD traffic impact studies, A5 tab 9, and are we marking this as A5?
This would be A5. A4 was the draft rules and regulations we offered at the last hearing. I think the way that we've been going through numbering, this volume 3 of our exhibit booklet would be A5, and then A5 tab 8, A5 tab 9, A5 tab 10, and then A5 tab 11.
So it's clear for the record, what we're marking as A5 is the September 7, 2023 exhibit booklet volume 3. From the applicant, and the tabs attached as well. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Solicitor.
Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, you have a copy of what's been marked as A5,
correct? Thank you.
And I will provide you with a full copy.
Thank you.
All right, Craig, turning to tab 8 in that exhibit booklet, what is this document?
It's a copy of my resume.
All right, did you provide this to me?
I did, yes.
And to the best of your knowledge, is this truthful and accurate as to your experience and educational background?
Yes, it is.
All right, with that, I would offer Mr. Milan as an expert in traffic engineering.
Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, do you have any questions of Mr. Milan?
No.
Ben?
No questions.
Okay. Does the board have any questions of the witness?
No.
Okay. So with that, I think we'll accept the witness as an expert in traffic engineering.
Thank you.
Can I ask if your mic is on?
It is. I'll try and
thank you.
Further, and I apologize.
Thank you.
Craig, in getting to work on this project, do you become familiar with the property at issue of this application?
I did, yes.
All right. And have you visited the property?
I have multiple times.
And in preparing your materials, studying the traffic impact of the project, studying the property in general, did you become familiar with any applicable township ordinances?
Yes, I did.
And in preparing all of your materials this evening, did you review and rely upon all applicable township ordinances to prepare those documents?
Yes, I did.
All right. And I guess it's important at this point. Can you describe to the board where we stand in kind of the development process related to these traffic improvements?
Sure. Traffic approvals related to development are typically broken into two phases. A planning phase, which is where we're at now, where a planning document is prepared that identifies improvements that are needed for site access and, if necessary, improvements for off-site. And then after the planning document is reviewed and approved, you move into a design and implementation. So that would be the stage where improvements that are agreed upon are designed, detailed engineering documents prepared, this sort of thing. So we're in the planning stage right now. Once we move through this and obtain approval of our study from your engineer and from the township, we move into the design implementation phase.
And am I correct in saying that if we proceed and get zoning approval or conditional use approval, that we would have to further go through a land development approval process with the township?
That's correct.
All right. And is it, in terms of getting approval and doing final designs for the traffic improvements, Would those possibly be refined or changed during that land development process?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so any plans and things that you're presenting this evening, would those not necessarily be final set in stone items that there's a chance that they will change?
That's correct. The planning document identifies at a comprehensive level the extent of the improvement that's proposed, and then the detailed engineering plans that are prepared would provide dimensions and pavement depths and those sorts of things. So those plans would be refined upon review from your engineer during the development process.
Okay. And have you prepared a traffic impact study for this proposal?
We have, yes.
All right. And turning to Exhibit A5, Tab 9, can you just describe what this document is for the board?
This is a copy of the narrative of the transportation impact study, so it's the report that summarizes the results and conclusions of our analysis.
Okay, and have we provided the township with, a larger document related to additional information and data that was collected?
Correct. The copy was provided to Mr. Armstrong, a full copy of that, which includes all of the backup details, the analyses, was provided to staff and to the township traffic engineer for review.
What we are going to do is, since A5 tab 9 is actually what's in the A5 booklet, this A5 tab 9, why don't we mark this as A5 tab 9?
A, something like that.
A.
I think that's fine. Yeah.
Just a differentiator. There are two different. So we're going to mark the large packet as A5 tab 9.
All right, Craig, in preparing the traffic impact study for this project, did you apply PennDOT's policies and procedures for transportation impact studies?
We did, yes. So the township has specific requirements for transportation impact study, or TIS as I'll refer to it moving forward, and then PennDOT does as well. So we prepared the TIS to meet PennDOT standards and township TIS standards as well.
Okay, would those TIS standards for the township, would those be located in the township subdivision land development?
They would, yes.
Okay. And in preparing the traffic impact study, what intersections did you study?
So we analyzed the 9 major intersections along the Route 422 corridor, starting on the east from Park and Cocoa Avenue, and then we studied all major intersections from there down to Orchard Road and 422, which is to the west of the proposed development.
All right, now looking at tab 9 in the exhibit booklet, what's marked as page 1, the top of the page it reads executive summary. There's a bullet pointed list. Are those all the intersections that were studied?
That is, yes, correct.
All right, and how were these intersections selected for analysis?
So prior to preparing the TIS, we went through a formal scoping process with your staff and with your engineer. It's customary to do that to make sure that we're on the same page in terms of what intersections are analyzed, what methods we use for forecasting trips, the time periods will count, those sort of things. So the intersections and a number of other parameters were confirmed with your engineering staff prior to preparing the report.
Okay. And just briefly, can you describe for the board what analysis did you perform, what studies did you perform to prepare this traffic impact study?
Yeah, sure. Just broadly speaking, it's more complicated than this, but from a 30,000-foot view, the purpose of the TIS is twofold. Its purpose is to evaluate direct site access requirements for development, so what's needed for safe and efficient ingress and egress to a particular site. And then the second role of the TIS is to evaluate the specific impacts of the development on the adjacent road network, so those 9 intersections that we had identified. To do that, we do traffic counts during peak periods to count the number of cars and the directions they go with those 9 intersections. We specifically conducted those counts, in this case, in June, while Hershey Park was fully open. That's required by your ordinance that the counts be done during those time frames. And then broadly speaking, we take those volumes, we adjust them to account for some general growth, and then we evaluate how those 9 intersections operate in the future without this development, and then compare it to how it'll operate with the development. And then from that analysis, we derive a set of recommendations.
Okay, and in preparing your study, did you, make a determination as to the projected number of new vehicle trips that would be generated by the project?
We did, yes.
All right, and how did you arrive at those projected numbers?
So I'm sure that this board is aware of this methodology, but there is a publication called the Trip Generation Manual, which is a statistical database that the Institute of Transportation Engineers has put together. It's the national standard that is referenced in your ordinance. It's referenced by PennDOT standards as well that require its usage. It was developed based on thousands of counts that have been done across the country at a multitude of land uses, so residential, commercial, industrial. If you can think of a land use, in most cases, they've done counts that have developed statistics. So what that allows you to do is the data in the Trip Generation Manual allows you to say a house on average that's a single family generates this much traffic per particular period. In this case, we did use the ITE's Trip Generation Manual. We do have a unique use in the character and the usage in terms of the residents that will live here. It's not multifamily, it's not apartments for market rate for anyone to come into, so there isn't a direct correlation to the land use codes that are provided in the Trip Generation Manual. But we did discuss that specifically with your staff and with your engineer, and it was ultimately determined that we wanted to be conservative. So for purposes of this report, we used ITE's data for off-campus student apartments. This USMER certainly is not that, but in consultation with your engineer and with staff, we thought that provides a conservative estimate of trip generation. And by conservative, I mean higher volume of traffic generated than we actually anticipate will be generated. There's also a very small component of commercial, ground-level commercial. So we did use the ITE data for small-scale retail. We thought that was appropriate and effective use. So the combination of those two land use codes were employed to develop the trip generation estimates.
Okay. Now, once the project is completed, how many new vehicle trips are you projecting during the weekday AM peak hour?
So just for context, I think the board's aware of this, but this is a study of peak hours. So we look at the busiest 1 hour period in the morning on a weekday, the morning rush hour, 1 hour period in the evening or the evening rush hour, and in this case, Saturday midday. And the theory is you want to look at the highest volume traffic periods on the road, assess impact during those times, and then if your improvements and the recommendations of the report work during those very busiest times, they'll also work the other 22 hours out of the day. So when I refer to peak hour, that's what I mean, the busiest 1 hour period, morning, evening, Saturday. So for the AM peak hour, using the methodology we referenced, our study shows 16 trips entering the site and 16 trips exiting the site during that AM peak hour. During the PM peak hour, we show 39 trips entering the site and 42 trips exiting the site. And then during the Saturday midday, we show 31 trips entering the site, 35 trips exiting the site.
Okay, and so that's summarized in the executive summary under number 5. That would be 32 new vehicle trips during the weekday AM peak hour, correct?
Correct.
And then 81 new vehicle trips during the weekday PM peak hour?
That's correct.
And then 66 vehicle trips during the Saturday midday peak hour?
Correct.
Okay. And those are just those two numbers added for each of those peak hours?
That's right. That's the total of the entering and the exit.
Now, did you also, in your analysis, review, I guess, the impact of this project in the future?
We did.
And how did you go about doing that?
So the traditional measure of evaluating how a road system works or how an intersection works is level of service. It's just a fancy way of identifying the amount of delay that a motorist, on average, experiences trying to navigate through an intersection. They're categorized, levels of service are categorized, similar to what you would see with a school report card. It's level of service A down through level of service F. Level of service A is associated with minimal delay, minimal congestion, and F is the opposite end of the spectrum. It's overcapacity, higher levels of delay, higher levels of congestion. So the standard for assessing impact with PennDOT and per your ordinance is in essence to see the levels of service that exist at these intersections before the development goes in, and then to compare the levels of service after they go in, and if there's a level of service degradation, then improvements are required to mitigate that impact.
Okay, so turning to page 4 of the executive summary, can you just describe for the board, what is this table showing?
Sure, so this table is summarizing the overall levels of service at the 9 intersections that we had referenced in various time periods and categories. So the 3 categories that it looks at are, you'll see in blue, it says existing. That's the existing level of service that we calculated at those intersections. And then you'll see it, the time period is AM, PM, Saturday. So there's, for each of these conditions, there's an AM evaluation, PM evaluation, Saturday. We then looked at, consistent with PennDOT standards and your ordinance standards, we looked at a 2026 forecasted year, which is when this development is projected to be fully built out. And we also looked at a 10-year threshold beyond that, 2036, which is a specific ordinance requirement. In gray, under the 2026 and 2036 columns, you'll see there's base and projected. Base represents future traffic conditions without this development. Projected represents future traffic conditions with the additional traffic from the development. And then you'll see the projected with a superscript of 1. That is projected with implementation of proposed improvements.
Okay. And then each of those, there's a letter next to a number of parentheses. What does the letter stand for? What does the number stand for?
So the letter is the level of service category. You'll see the, most are C or D or A or B, so that's the category associated with a specific range of delay. And then the number that is behind that is the average delay that a motorist experiences going through that intersection during that period.
Okay, and what conclusions did you reach regarding the projected intersection level of service in 2036?
So largely because of the relatively low traffic generation that we show at the offsite intersections, we did not show any level of service degradations when you compare conditions without the development to conditions with the development.
All right. Now, moving back to page 2 of the executive summary, in the traffic impact study, did you propose any remediation steps?
We did, yes.
Now, can you just walk through, I see each of these is identified here. Can you just walk the board through what are the proposed improvements that you're suggesting here?
Sure, absolutely. So the improvements that are identified in the executive summary are largely related to providing safe and efficient access, which they will do, but the ancillary benefit, because of where we're doing these improvements, that they'll also have some benefit to the adjacent property owners that are there. So it's not just directly related to site access. And what may be helpful just for the audience and for the board, Chuck, is if you could pull up the conditional use site plan, it would be helpful to see an illustration that I can use the laser pointer to describe.
Looking for the things to do A3 and 7. Do they have a more filling?
Page Chuck, there we go. That's perfect. That one. So I will summarize the improvement recommendations on page 2 and page 3. Just to keep it sequential. I may not go in the exact order that's here, but I will summarize everything that's in here just so everybody's aware. I'm not sure if there was discussion of this in previous hearing and testimony, but one of the improvement recommendations is for this access interconnection with the Hershey Plaza apartment complex. If you've been out to the site, that's open today. There's the ability for cars to go between here and this parking lot. There was some discussion early on as part of project development about whether that should be maintained to give Hershey Plaza access to our site and to the improvements and vice versa. And there was some conversation about possibly doing a gated crossing at this connection that would only be cart accessed by residents here or residents here. The applicant had conversations with the owner of the Hershey Plaza, and they confirmed that they did not want that access to be maintained. They wanted it to be closed off. So our study recommends, for emergency services purposes, that a gate be constructed at this location, but it'll be a gate that can be operated by emergency services personnel. So police, fire, ambulance would be able to use that at that location, but it will not be open for everyday use. Moving down to L Street here, our study recommended that L Street be reconstructed in this section from First Street down to Route 422. It would be reconstructed in accordance with township standards to meet the applicable design standard for that particular road. One of the elements that we also recommended in conjunction with that is to clean up the parking and access for Dunkin' Donuts here. If you've been out there, it's a bit of a free-for-all today. You have parking spaces for Dunkin' Donuts that back up directly onto the L Street carway, which is not desirable. So we recommended, and this exhibit shows construction of a raised median to separate the L Street carway from the parking lot that's with Dunkin' Donuts, which will improve safety and operational efficiency here. And then the intent would be for motorists going to Dunkin' Donuts to enter at this location and to have one-way circulation northward coming out of the northernmost driveway. Moving down to West Chocolate Avenue and L Street, we're proposing to reconstruct this intersection as well and to put radii in that accommodate a school bus or a shuttle. One thing that I think would be helpful in conjunction with that recommendation, if the board has not heard this before, but shuttle service will be provided to this particular project. And because the applicant has control of the users that are staying here in the shuttles, they have the ability to direct the way shuttles will enter and exit the facility. So the intended shuttle route circulation for this project is to come from the east or westbound on the 422, turn right into L Street, drop off pickup in this area, circulate clockwise around the building like this, come out to L Street, and then make a right turn. The owners do not want the shuttle to be making left turns because of the volumes that are on Route 422 during peak periods. So the direction to those drivers will be to turn right from L Street onto 422, continue to the Hockersville Road signal, turn left at that signal, and then continue on their way. What our study found, one other quick point, you'll see there are lines here and here by Valley Street. As we understand it, the township secured funding to do pedestrian enhancements at that location. Generally speaking, I believe it involves bump outs here, some crosswalk enhancements, some other pedestrian crossing enhancements. So our study recommended that the reconstruction and design of L Street here be coordinated with the township's project here, just to make sure that the designs are consistent and that construction is coordinated so that there's not the ripping out of brand new improvements. What our study found with respect to L Street, and for that matter for M, N, and Orchard, which are the next unsignalized roads as you continue to the west, as I'm sure is of no shock to this board, we found to make a left turn from an unsignalized access or local road to 422 during the peak times is extremely difficult because of the volume of traffic that's there. We're showing high levels of delay for left turn movements. Traditionally, what you do when you have that circumstance, which is pretty common, I would venture to say any unsignalized local road or driveway that accesses 422 in this area experiences this very thing. What you do when you have that situation is you look at the gaps in traffic at the intersections to determine if, even if someone has to wait, are there enough gaps in the traffic stream during that peak for left turns to occur. When we do our traffic counts, we actually use cameras that record data, so we're able to actually watch the operation of these intersections and do gap studies. What we noticed, particularly at L Street and particularly during the PM peak, was that the queue from Ridge, which is off the page here, backs up fairly persistently past L Street during those times. It happens in the AM and Saturday, but not as much. Our observation was that it was fairly persistent during the PM peak hour and occasional during those other two periods. When you have that sort of situation, normally what you look at is some sort of turning prohibition from the side street, because you don't want someone to make a left turn across the cube here and have to get a gap, or if someone's waiting to turn left and they're trying to, you have someone waiting to turn left in and someone swinging around where you can't see them, you want to prevent that sort of situation. One thing that could be done would be to permanently prohibit exiting left turns from L Street, where you do an island and you force everyone during all times to do that. We considered that, but recognizing that L Street doesn't provide more than just access for this development, there's other properties, we wanted to look at some different scenarios. So what our study recommended is that L Street have left turn movements prohibited southbound turning left from here to here during the PM peak hour. So that would entail installing a no left turn sign and then a placard that identifies the time periods. We would have to confirm those time periods with the township, but our suggestion was 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then again, this is only proposed in our study for the PM peak hour. We're not proposing it for the AM or for the Saturday. It was necessary based on the data that we had. Now, we realize it's a sign, and there's always the potential for people to disobey signs. But the one advantage to this sort of traffic control is that if the board agrees to it and your engineer agrees it's appropriate, you can adopt it as an ordinance, and then it legally becomes enforceable, where if you're noticing left turns occurring that should not occur, you have the ability to have your police enforce that and to issue a citation if you so choose. I will say, though, L Street is owned by the township, so ultimately the decision on that, the discretion to do that or to not do that, is this board's in cooperation with your engineer. So it's a suggestion that we had in our study that this developer is proposing to implement. The township believes it's appropriate, but we're willing to have discussions with this board and with your engineer in terms of the appropriateness of that. Question that raises from that is then during those PM peaks, someone wants to make a left turn, what do? We had fairly extensive conversations with your staff. And I'm sorry, I feel like I'm fading in and out. I'll try to be more consistent on the microphone. In terms of the best way to address this, what our study ultimately recommended is, since the left turns are prohibited here, or recommended to be prohibited, we needed to give this development and the other existing developments in the area an opportunity to make a left turn elsewhere. So our study recommends a full widening and reconstruction of First Street here from L Street all the way down to Orchard, which is not shown on this plan. It's down in this location. Or actually, maybe it is.
It's not shown on that plan.
Okay. The intent is to widen and reconstruct First Street to your alley standards. That will bring it up to 18 feet in width and will make it safe for two-way traffic. If you've been out there today, just the pavement condition and the width, it's arguably unsafe to have two-way traffic on that stretch of the road. So we thought it was appropriate to bring it up to an alley standard to make it safe for two-way traffic. Thereby, in doing that, if someone wants to make a left turn during those peak times, they'd have the ability to safely travel down First Street to M and or Orchard and make a left turn there, if they so chose. What we are trying to balance is we want to make it safe for two-way traffic, but we don't want to make it so wide that we either encourage speeding or we encourage people who shouldn't be on this road, who aren't living here or living at the developments that are nearby, to use it. So you're trying to strike a balance between making it safe and then calming it in a way where we don't encourage speeding or non-local traffic to do it. The 18 feet is tight. It'll feel tight as you drive by. It'll be wide enough and safe for two-way traffic, but it'll be intentionally tight to try and balance those two things that we had referenced. Chuck?
That enhancement, is that as far as it can still?
It is, yeah. All the way down to the Orchard Street intersection. And actually, because a picture's worth a thousand words, Chuck, if you don't mind, pulling up a render. We did a rendering along the car barn just to kind of give you a feel for how it would look.
And this is a tab 10 in the exhibit booklets, is what we have up on the screen.
So this is the car barn here. This is a rendering, so this is a representation of what the road would look like once improvements are constructed. So this is First Street, and this width from here until here is 18 feet. And it's proposed to construct a curb, a grass strip, and then a sidewalk. And then the grass strip allows for some beautification with landscaping, lighting, and then there's some utility poles that will be relocated. So this is just a cross-section along the car barn, but the intent would be that this cross-section is taken from L Street all the way to Orchard in conjunction with this project.
And just to orient again, where is our project?
Our project
relative
is,
to this view?
It is to the east, so the walking away from this picture is where our site is, and then looking forward, if you were walking in the direction of these pedestrians, you'd be walking towards Orchard.
Okay, so essentially our project would be behind you.
Correct. And if you want to pull up, I'm just about done here, I promise. One other recommendation in conjunction with this, let me make one point on First Street. One of the reasons we decided to pursue this is that the township's comprehensive plan identifies construction of a road in this area where the properties that front the railroad, which would be this property and all the properties to the west over here that have frontage along the railroad, that an improved access road be constructed in this area to provide them with additional access alternatives. So in our opinion, by reconstructing First Street, bringing it to the alley standard, we're accomplishing a goal that's identified in the township's comprehensive plan. Last recommendation that we had, and again, this falls in the category of turning movement restrictions here because the township owns this road as well, but as we were walking the site, talking to some residents that were there, M Street at this location has the feel of a one-way street. It's narrow. There's some structures that are in close proximity to it, so it's difficult to widen. So our study recommended that M Street, at its current cartway width, be converted to one-way. Again, the townships wouldn't have the purview to make that decision here, but our thought was that M Street be converted to one-way southbound, where you'd be able to turn off of First Street onto M and turn onto 422, but you would be prohibited from turning left from 422 into M from either direction. So if the board and your engineer believe that to be an appropriate recommendation as part of this project, the signs and the pavement markings and the ordinance that would be needed for that one-way conversion would be completed as part of this project.
All right, now looking at the recommendations, I see one that's identified as multimodal accommodations, and I think you already touched on the shuttle service and sidewalks along M Street and L Street. Can you also just touch on the bike programs?
Yeah, sure. This actually ties in as well with the discussion about trip generation earlier. I had said that we think the actual vehicle traffic generation of this use will be lower than what ITE predicts, and that's largely because of the focus on multimodal accommodations. So it may have been testified to earlier, but in I'm not sure of the appropriate term, the residential agreement, the lease agreement for residents will require that the shuttle service being provided to the school, to HERCO facilities, be used when it's available. So the intent is to get people out of cars, get them into the shuttle that's provided to minimize the amount of traffic that's coming out of this facility during those peak times. So that's one of the reasons we think it would be lower than what ITE's bridge is projecting, and you have an owner who's able to build that requirement into the lease requirements with the residents. And then secondly, on the multimodal side, there's transit, but then there's also pedestrian and bicycle accommodations. So the intent is to widen L Street with the sidewalk, and then sidewalks throughout the site that will get pedestrians down to the existing pretty substantial pedestrian network that exists along 422 and then as you continue downtown. The last piece of that is to focus on bicycle accommodations. There is an intent to do bicycle racks within the development here. And then also the applicant has been coordinating with Penn State Health, who has the bike share program. And the intent is to have a bike share location yet to be determined, but somewhere in this area where someone is coming internationally doesn't have a bike, they'd be able to rent a bike at a low cost and use it.
Okay. I want to go back to table one on the overall intersection level of service summary that we touched on earlier. Looking across the different levels of service, are there any significant or material changes in the level of service for any of the studied intersections?
There are not. And again, because I think it's helpful maybe for the audience as much as the board, when we're evaluating the levels of service and saying that the impact is minimal, it's a comparison between without development and with development. Our study doesn't say that there isn't congestion in downtown. Our study doesn't say that there aren't areas where improvements are desirable. It's really a comparison between how it operates without the development versus how it operates with. So it's that delta. It's not a statement of traffic operation in downtowners.
And how it operates with the development, that includes if the recommended improvements are made, correct?
Correct.
So you're saying if the improvements you're recommending are made, this is what you're projecting that the impact would be?
That's right, yes.
All right, and will all of the studied intersections satisfy the level of service requirements?
Yes, the township does not have specific requirements. PennDOT does, and we satisfy the PennDOT requirements.
All right, now turning to tab 11, can you just explain to the board what this document is?
So one of the things that we thought would be helpful is to compare the traffic generation of issues, assuming the ITE methodology that I referenced, to another possible use that could go on this site based on the current zoning. To develop that, we're just traffic engineers, so we're not good at developing, understanding what could go on there in terms of use and size. So we coordinated with the project architect and the site engineer, RGS Associates, to evaluate a higher intensity use that could go on this site and be permitted by the current zoning. What was determined from that evaluation is that you could roughly fit about 45,000 square feet of retail and 120 market rate apartments on this particular site. So to answer your question, this table A, and I'm forgetting the exhibit,
so it's tab 11.
Tab 11. What this compares is the Hershey Lumberyard project and the estimates in our transportation impact study to what ITE would predict 120 apartments and 45,000 square feet of retail would generate. So it goes and compares on a weekday basis, 24-hour period, and then AM, PM, Saturday peak hours.
Okay, and when you say at the top it says average weekday, is that the number of total trips would be expected?
That's right, in and out over the course of a 24-hour period.
Okay, so for our proposed use, the total would be slightly over 1,000.
Correct.
Whereas the more intense scenario that you described would be almost 4,700, almost 4,800?
That's correct.
All right, and then I guess looking at this chart, what was the general conclusion that you reached?
So our conclusion was that there are other combinations of uses permitted by the existing ordinance that could be much more traffic intensive than what's proposed as part of Hershey Lumberyard. It varies depending on peak period, but the difference was 78% to 87% more traffic would be generated by the 120 apartments, the 45,000 square feet retail, when you compare it against the estimates for the Hershey Lumberyard.
Okay, and is there any specific reason why these numbers are so different?
Predominantly the retail. Retail is a significant generator. There is a very small component of commercial as part of the Hershey Lumberyard project, but in consultation with RGS Associates and the architects, this could conceivably handle 45,000 square feet, almost 45 times the amount of retail that is currently proposed for commercial. So it's the retail component that I think is significantly driving that result.
Okay, now I want to just summarize with the last few questions. So based on the work that you've done thus far and the mitigation strategies that you proposed, are you confident that there are adequate public facilities available to serve the proposed use in terms of vehicular access?
Yes, I am.
And in your expert opinion as a traffic engineer, will there be sufficient access for emergency vehicles to enter and exit the property in the event of an emergency?
Yes, there will be.
All And with regard to traffic and vehicular access, will the proposed use detract from the use and enjoyment of adjoining or nearby properties?
No, it will not.
And then finally, with regard to traffic and vehicular access, will the proposed use have any effect on the character of the surrounding neighborhood?
No, it will not adversely impact the surrounding neighborhood.
I have no further direct questioning. I would offer them over to objectors or the board for any questions.
Sure, the board will see if Mr. Evans has any questions. Mr. Leonard, do you have any questions of the witness?
No.
Ms. Leonard?
No.
Members of the board?
I have some questions. Thank you, Mr. Lott. Thank you for your testimony. It was very clear, and I appreciate that. We're getting better at understanding your testimony, which I think is a help for all of us. But when you, in the exhibits that talk about that reference AM and PM peak hour, what did you conclude were, what hours are we talking about when we say AM peak hour and PM peak hour?
Sure. This study. Let me see if I can direct you in the exhibit. So in the TIS that's in the exhibit packet, if you look at page 8, you'll see there's a table 2 with the manual traffic count information.
Which tab?
This is tab 9.
Thank you.
Tab 9, table 2, which is page 8 at the bottom. You'll see that table identifies the peak hours that were observed when we had done our count, so that the last column says intersection peak hour. You will see it varies depending on the intersection. They're not all consistent, but it looks like, generally speaking, the AM peak hour that we observed was 7:30 to 8:30. That seems to be fairly consistent. And then 4:45 to 5:45, or 4:30 to 5:30, just kind of depends where you're at along the corridor, but in that general range is the peak hour. And then what we do is we, Supervisor Brazil, we evaluate each intersection individually, so it's the period that the most number of cars total go through. So in downtown, it should be relatively consistent because most people are traveling through, but the further you get out, the diversion of traffic, it can change.
And that's helpful. You referenced the manual, but tell me the name of the manual again.
The Trip Generation Manual. It's very original.
The Trip Generation. And this is published by whom?
The Institute of Transportation Engineers.
And that's a...
It's
an
industry
organization.
It is. It's an industry organization for the transportation engineering community.
And based on your experience, do they update this manual?
They do. We're in the 11th edition, so there have been 10 before that. So it varies, but it's updated every 4 to 5 years. And it's updated to include new categories that didn't exist. For instance, marijuana dispensary was not something that had traffic generation 20 years ago. It is now. And then the existing categories, they also update in some cases to have additional traffic count data, because the larger the sample size, the more counts that are done, the better the data is.
And so the current edition is the 11th edition?
It is. It was updated in 2021.
Okay. And moving to your testimony around the recommendations dealing with prohibited turns. It makes, based on your testimony, I think I concur with your assessment of a prohibited turn sign at L Street where it intersects with Chocolate Avenue during peak hours. My question, though, is should we also be considering prohibited left-hand turn signs at the end of, I think it's M and N streets, as well as they intersect with Chocolate Avenue.
The township would have that, have the ability to consider that. Our theory was, and I was out there, I saw that DeMatt Richard, that sometimes you have slow traffic all the way from the signals, but the further west you got away from the signal, the less likely you would have a queue blocking it. So we thought M and N and Orchard would be better suited for those left turns because it's less likely. L Street's within, I think it's like 550 feet. So the probability, 550 feet of Ridge Road and the signal there. So the thought was the further to the west that you go, the less likely you would have a queue blocking it. But M Street in particular is owned by the townships. So you would have the right to implement a similar restriction there. There's some debate about whether the township owns N Street, so that one I'm not sure of. There has been some discussion that that's potentially privately owned, so I'm not sure if the township would have the ability specifically to do that. But M and Orchard are township owned.
When you referenced First Street, and you showed us the picture of L Street, and the idea is that it would be two-way, 18 feet. And what struck me was the car in that picture, and I'm wondering, would we also be required, because it is narrow, but you correctly have garage structures on the left of the picture, should we also be considering placing no parking signs or no standing or stopping signs on that road? Because otherwise, it does seem like it defeats the purpose. If people can stop their car on the street and unload it or whatever else, you are sort of blocking it.
Most certainly, as we walked the field with the project team looking at this, that was one of the comments that was made. And that is something that the township could proactively do up front and adopt an ordinance. Or it's something where I would tend to think you see this sort of cartway, most people would know not to park. But if that in fact happens, the township would have the ability to go and adopt an ordinance later to install the signs. But it could be done up front or if there becomes a problem.
Yeah, I think the concern would be we want to do everything possible if we're really going to use this road, First Street, as a way of helping reduce traffic on Chocolate Avenue. We want to make sure we give no reason for people not to use it. And, a pickup truck or a larger vehicle stops to unload or offload items would have the impact of having people ignore it.
And similar to the conversation with L Street, since the township, I believe, owns First Street, you have the ability to adopt a no parking prohibition. Signs could be installed, and then if there's an ordinance tied to it, you'd have the ability to enforce as well.
Okay, thank you. Those are the questions I have, but I'm sure there are other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Thank you, Mr. Mullen, for this morning. This was really helpful. I've got a few questions, but one of them is in regards to this photo here. So in the widening of this street to make it passable by two cars, will the electrical poles, will those need to be moved?
They will.
So that's a new placement for them.
Correct.
And then is there any, obviously it has to be expanded, is the expansion happening just on the car barn side so that the private properties that are on the other side of the street, the left-hand side of the street, those won't be impacted?
That is correct. That's a good question that I did not clarify. The intent is to widen to the north and not impact the properties to the south of First Street.
Okay. That was my first set of questions. And then we've talked a lot about turning in and turning out, and there are businesses along there, so the Duck Donuts and the businesses that are in the strip mall. Has your group been speaking with those businesses so that they're in the know about all of this going on and the potential impact?
Yes, the applicant's representative has been talking. I shouldn't state without knowing specifically. I know he's talked to a great number of those, And then I think the expectation would be is we take this from planning, if the township thinks it makes sense and the study's approved, into land development. Those conversations would have to happen again. Plans would have to be presented so that the property owners understand what's being proposed, where signs will go, where restriction will go, those sorts of things. So I think that's something that's underway, and there's been lots of conversations, and we'll have to firm up those conversations as we move into land development should the conditional use be approved.
So, like, specifically, like, the deck donuts, like, adding that little kind of barrier to the cartway, that's something that they're aware of?
My understanding is yes.
Okay.
That is my understanding.
Okay.
So they submitted a
letter. I need to know your name. Thanks. Sorry.
Being told the Duck Donuts, we had a letter from Duck Donuts. They are aware of it. They've been presented with it. I think as Mr. Lott said, we still have to go through land development. There's still a lot of design and kind of outreach that we go into having this project be ready to go. So I think that we can firm all that as we go along to it.
Thank you. I think that we all up here just want to make sure that the business owners are in the know about what's happening. And the potential impacts that you're communicating with them. I do have a question about on page 4 of table 1, overall intersection level of service. And Mr. Mott, it looks like what you testified to, the level of service doesn't change. There's just one outlier, and maybe it's just a typo, but it's State Route 422, Cocoa Avenue, Park Avenue. Projected 2036, it goes from a C to an A.
Yeah, let me double check that. Sometimes there's some weird quirks when you add traffic, delay goes down. I know that makes no sense, but these are software programs you're using, or quite possibly could be typos. So
like everything looks completely the same except that one item.
Yep.
One more question in regards to the Plaza Apartments. You had mentioned that in your communications with the Plaza Apartments, they did not want traffic to be cutting through.
Correct.
So my question to you is, what about fire equipment or police equipment? Like, what are the options for getting emergency equipment through there?
That certainly is a detail we'll have to work out with your staff and with your emergency services people to make sure that whatever's put in there works. But the intent is there are various gate systems, as I understand, that can be constructed that a fire truck driver or a police officer or an ambulance can easily have activated and go through relatively quickly. So I think that's a detail we'll have to work with your public works people and make sure we put something there that works with the type of equipment they have and that they know how to use it.
And then my last question is, with the traffic counts, looking at the intended use of this building and everything coordinated with this building, the small commercial space, I know in a prior hearing we learned that there's extra parking spots back there. So the traffic study, does that count anybody that might be, oh, this is a brand new parking lot, like, let's park back here?
It does not. The trip generation manual, there is a unit of measure you use, so like one residential unit generates this much. For the methodology we used, it was the number of units and the square footage, that's what you use to generate trips. So it didn't factor in the additional parking spaces that are shown there. I don't think there's any intent. I think there's intent for possible future shared parking, but there's no intent for someone that the owners are not aware of that we've worked out an agreement with the park and the parking lot.
So will it be signed like this is not for public parking, just to make sure that people, I mean, parking can be at a premium in downtown Hershey.
Sure.
So having some sort of signage where we're not encouraging more people and then more traffic going back on that small road and then also coming in and out of those, you know, smaller access points.
My understanding, that can be corrected by the owner, is there'll be signing or some sort of deed system that only allows authorized parkers to park in the parking lot.
Yeah, my understanding is it will be gated.
Oh, great. Okay. That's all the questions I have right now. Thank you very much.
I'd like to echo to Chris. I'm pretty sure the one material was laid out is very clear and helpful for me to understand.
The question I had, though, is just to clarify, you said the study was done in June.
Correct. June of 2023, so 3 months ago. We collected the counts in June, and then we did the analysis in July.
And the peak hour, again, is 7:30 to 8:30.
Yeah, and it varies slightly. The AM seemed to be pretty consistent in downtown of 7:30 to 8:30. PM peak hour varies a little bit more, so it's Saturday, but AM is generally 7:30 to 8:30.
What kind of stuff do you want?
11.
I'm sorry, did you?
No, I was just generally asking what time Hershey Park would open, and does that have any impact? Because it was June reflecting the peak hour of 7:30 to 8:30.
Just a clarifying question. When you were collecting this data, you collected it throughout the entire day, correct?
We did collect it, but we focused on the AM peak, 6 to 9 AM, and then 3 to 6 PM.
So what the numbers that you're presenting are the peak results that you have, but you looked at traffic throughout the day. It wasn't just, you weren't there for 1 hour making the data collection. You were collecting throughout the entire day and then reporting on the highest levels, correct?
In some locations, yes. We didn't collect data everywhere at every intersection, but some locations, correct. Our, just having done counts in this area working on other projects, what drives design seems to be the evening peak. That seems to be the busiest time for traffic. That's where we saw the most amount of congestion, most amount of queuing. That seems to overlap with Hershey Park being open, people coming back from work, coming back from school, going to restaurants. That seems to drive. So even if there is a little bit of a spike in the 10 to 11, beyond it, the PM really drives because it's higher than anything else the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Craig, I just got one piece of confirmation here, and I know I've heard this a half a dozen times already, but with the improvements that are approved, or the proposed improvements for this project, you've testified that the level of service, it won't be improved, but it won't be degraded. It'll just, at the very least, it'll stay the same.
Yeah. From an overall perspective, that's right. Yeah, and then what we're doing, actually, some of the comments we got from HRG, and we've already done this, your engineer hasn't seen it, but we did gap studies at the other roads, NM and Orchard, just to verify that there are more gaps. And it turns out there are. It's just a function of the queue doesn't extend back that far as much as it does at Oak Street.
Thanks, Greg. That's all
I have. Do you know which intersections you counted and took data throughout the day and which you did not?
It was L Street. 422.
L Street is the one that you collected data throughout the entire day?
Correct.
The others you did not?
Correct.
The others, did you only focus on the hour from peak AM and peak PM?
Yep. So the way we do counts is we have video cameras and we can collect over a long period of time, which we did at L Street. At the other intersections we counted, we have data where we process for the peak periods in the morning, the evening, and on Saturday. That is, by the way, that's conventional for transportation impact studies.
And based upon collecting data at the intersection of West Chocolate and L Street the entire day, based on that data, your peak AM was 7:30 to 8:30 AM.
That is correct, yes.
And your peak PM was 4:30 to 5:30 PM.
Correct.
Okay, and that, again, based on your data that you collected at West Chocolate and Dow, those were the two peak hours.
Right, on a weekday.
Okay. All right. I believe you testified you used off-campus student apartment use and a small-scale commercial for the small commercial piece of use, right?
Correct.
And that's how you came up with the 32 new AM peak hour trips, right?
That's right.
And the 81 new PM peak hour trips.
Correct.
66 new Saturday and day peak hour trips.
Yes, correct.
As opposed to the off-campus student apartment use, is there a number for a dormitory use or an on-campus dormitory type use?
would have to check. I believe there is a dormitory. There's a category for dormitories.
And we did. Would that increase or decrease the number?
I would have to check, depending on where it's located. If it's in the middle of the campus, it's probably going to generate less than the off-campus. We thought off-campus was appropriate because students could have cars, they potentially can walk to the school, they could drive to the school, so we thought it was a little bit more representative.
Okay.
But again, the trip generation man didn't have a specific code that that directly correlates to what's proposed, so in those cases, you're hoping to find the closest fit. I mean, we arrived at off-campus student apartments being that closest fit.
And I suspect there's also a category for just apartment use.
There is, yes.
Would those numbers be higher than the numbers that you're reporting in your study?
I would, yes, I would anticipate they would be higher than what we're reporting.
And is the reason you didn't use those is because it's your understanding that those use is subject to the requirements in the township zoning ordinance for employee and student dwellings?
That's correct.
Did you take in, when you came up with your numbers, did you take into account the anticipation of the use of the shuttle service?
We did, yes.
So did the you with that understanding that did that decrease your numbers?
It did not. To be conservative, we understood during those peaks that there would be three shuttles in and out. So we took the ITE data for the off-campus student housing for the small scale retail and then added three shuttles in, three shuttles out during the AM and PM.
Okay, so I guess what I'm asking is, you didn't take whatever the ID, you didn't take whatever the number is for off-campus student apartment use and decrease that based upon your understanding of the use of the shuttle service.
That's correct. We added it.
You added it. You took that number from the ITE for off-campus student apartment use. You didn't change that, but you added an additional three for the anticipated shuttle service.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. In the event that the shuttle, in the event that the shuttle service was not used, would that impact the numbers here?
I don't think so because if it because we selected the off-campus student apartment for that very reason. You would have students that were able to walk or ride their bikes or potentially drive. So if there wasn't a shuttle service, I think it would probably be similar to what we're estimating in the report. But based on the testimony that's been given before in terms of the lease requirement, we're not anticipating that. The shuttle service will be a fundamental component of keeping vehicle trips down during the peaks with this use.
Okay. So you indicated primarily, at least for the shuttles, from West Chocolate right into L.
Correct.
Left onto First.
Correct.
And then a right into the, that's a one-way access drive along the, we'll say the back of the building.
That's correct.
Okay, and that one-way access drive, is that, that's one way, and again, I'm looking at A3 tab 7, I think it's the second plan there.
It is. It's correct. It's one that access drive from First Street on the western side of the building all the way up the western side is one way northbound, and then on the northern side is one way eastbound, and then on the western side is one way southbound to this point here.
And you're pointing to where the proposed parking on both sides of that access by where it's indicating a proposed dual EV charger, that's where it changes from one way to two way?
Correct.
And I believe you said you're gonna gate off that access to the Hershey Plaza for purposes of emergency services only?
That's correct.
Okay. The right in, right out at L Street and West Chocolate that you testified to, you've testified that you're recommending that only be for the peak hours, peak A or peak PM?
Correct, and left in, so driving eastbound on 422, turning left in, that would be allowed. The only movement that would be prohibited during a certain period would be the southbound left turn movement from L Street onto 422, and only during the PM peak period, which we identified as 3 to 6 PM, but we'll have to confirm with the engineer if that time time frame is appropriate to be compressed or expanded.
And there's no anticipation for the need of a traffic signal there?
There is not, no. Even there are, as I'm sure the board knows, there's specific volume thresholds that have to be met, which were well below. Plus, this is too close to the existing signal at Ridge and 422, and that's considered a signal here.
Okay. Did you take into account the traffic flow or the anticipated, I guess, cut through for the Rite Aid parking lot and any additional parking lots that are abutting the access drives?
To the degree that those volumes showed up in the counts that we did at L, M, N, and Orchard, we did. There was a comment that came up at the Planning Commission about people cutting through the Rite Aid parking lot. And it seems like there are potentially some people that are doing that, but our camera that was stationed here for L Street to do the traffic count, stationed right here looking this way, so we actually counted this Rite Aid driveway and this Rite Aid driveway at the Planning Commission. What we found is the volume of traffic going in and out of those driveways is pretty substantially less than what the trip generation manual would estimate for a pharmacy. So we don't have counts back here at these driveways, but by virtue of how much traffic rates generated onto to and from 422, our conclusion is that there's not significant cut-through traffic using the parking lot, because you would expect it to be much higher than what IDE projects, and actually it's fairly substantially lower.
Okay, and if we're looking at A5, tab 9, table 2, or no, I'm sorry, table 1. The State Route 422 and L Street, there's no degradation of service between, like, it's projected 2026 and 2036, correct?
From an overall level of service perspective, correct.
But there is somewhat of going to be an anticipated increase in, is that wait time on L Street to get onto West Chocolate?
Is there a specific movement that you're, are you looking at 422?
I'm just looking at the intersection for 422 and L Street.
There, yeah, so there, the levels of service that are represented here are the overall average of every single vehicle, so including those that have no delay on 422, which would be the through movements on 422. They have zero delay. It's only if you're turning from L Street onto 422 or turning left from westbound 422 onto L Street. So that factors in all the average, that factors in the average delay of every single motorist. And just depending on the time period, yes, you're showing an overall average increase from level service A, 0.3 to 1.7 in the PM peak hours, what we show for the 2026 opening year, is what the study shows. And then with the left turn prohibition, it goes back to base conditions.
Okay, I guess what I'm trying to see is, did you have any concern with respect to backup on L Street at peak hours or even off peak hours?
No, we don't. We actually did a queue evaluation as well, or the line of cars, how long it would back up, and the queue evaluation didn't show any significant queuing on L Street.
Okay. The parking lot, you're aware that there's additional parking spaces proposed as opposed to what's required?
As I understand it, yes. We didn't do a specific evaluation, but I understand they're providing more than required by a minimum ordinance standard.
TPD wasn't involved in the parking aspect of it?
We were not, no.
Okay. And just the improvements that you've touched on it, at the intersection of L and West Chocolate, what exactly are those, besides obviously signage and any widening, any?
It is largely intersection reconstruction. So there's the shifting of the L Street cartway, it's hard to see here, slightly to the west. That we're doing that intentionally to give us some room to kind of provide the separation between the Duck Donuts parking lot. And then the pavement and the width will be reconstructed with new radii that are constructed here that will accommodate the shuttles or the school buses. So we want to make sure that those vehicles can turn right and not have to swing wide, and the buses can turn right without having to fence went wide into an opposing lane.
Okay. And then for emergency services, fire trucks, have you done an analysis with respect to the ability of those vehicles to access the property through L first and then swinging around the one way around the building?
We have not specifically, but as part of land development, when there's detailed design, I'm certain that level of evaluation will be done to make sure that the design can accommodate emergency vehicles.
Okay, and one thing, the last thing I have, and as a traffic engineer, typically you look at pedestrian safety as well, right? You want to touch anything up? Did you look at the pedestrian safety associated with this, the pedestrian traffic from this use to West Chocolate or elsewhere?
Well, we did not do a formal crash evaluation of the study area, the entire study area. There were some comments from HRG that we'll have to take a look at and respond back to as part of a resubmission. But really the intent was to provide safe pedestrian access along from the site along L Street down to the existing pedestrian network sidewalk system that exists on 422 that takes you into downtown. And then this will also come with an upgraded crosswalk that is accessible to, that's ADA accessible as well.
And did I also do it correctly? Were you recommending M Street to be made one way in or out?
Out is southbound. The recommendation was that M Street be this direction where you're able to turn into it from first, head southward on M, and then you can turn left or right for the 422. And then do not enter signs will be posted here where you can't come in from either direction for the teams. That was our recommendation for the township's consideration.
Okay. And then if the township were not to agree to the one-way on M Street, or if the township were not to agree to the limitations of the right-in, right-out on L Street, or the widening of First Street, would you have concerns with respect to the traffic safety, both pedestrian and vehicular, associated with these?
Not significantly, no. Part of that will be to respond to HRG's comments. We'll take a look at the crash history there just to see what's happening. The reality that we found with our counts, I'm sure this is no shock to anyone here, there are not very many people trying to make left turns today from Hill Street, from N Street, because it's hard. It's really difficult to do. So we don't have specific data showing this, but I suspect during the peaks anyway, most people are turning right, headed west, and then going to Hockersville or somewhere else to make their way back east.
Okay. And then just two more. With the understanding that the majority of the traffic hopefully will be by shuttle, do you have any idea, that's a tough question, but the personal vehicular traffic from the residents or from the occupants of those dwellings, where are you trying to guide them to get out of the facility? Do you understand the question?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think the intent would be the majority of traffic off-peak, AM, PM, would be to L Street and to L Street and 422. With this serving the Milton Hershey School, we're thinking during those peak times, most people would be headed to and from the east. During those PM peaks, if they want to go that direction, the intent as they move in and they learn the area would be to give them the opportunity of First Street being improved to come down to M, N, or Orchard if they so choose to turn right or to turn left and head eastbound into town.
Okay. And then you touched on, I guess, HRG. You have provided, did you provide HRG with the traffic impact
study? We did. My understanding is that a transportation impact study is not required for the conditional use process, but we know the sensitivity with traffic. We know ultimately there's some questions that have to be answered, so we did it proactively. We submitted it to HRG. They responded with some review comments within the last week or so.
Do you actually have those comments? Just
we
do.
Do
you want to take the board? I don't know if the board's interested in knowing what the comments from HRG at this point would be.
Yeah, I think you don't want to share those.
Yeah, sure. And we have to make a formal resubmission back to Eric and HRG, but we did go through them informally, and I can testify and say, looking at the comments, we don't anticipate the comments from HRG will change any of the conclusions or recommendations of our report.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have any house on this board does, or if you want to see if the Eric or Chuck have any specific questions.
Craig, you mentioned N being a private, potentially private. So is that where the hotel is?
It is.
So if the hotel owners said, we don't want anybody coming through here, they
personally... The hotel owners said what?
If the hotel owners said, we don't want anybody driving through here, would they be able to post a sign that says, we don't want people driving through here?
And that's a good question. We'd have to, they wouldn't be able to close it off on the state highway because that's PennDOT controlled.
Okay.
The other end, I don't know, maybe Chuck would be able to answer that.
I mean,
I was just thinking of, like, we're talking about
restrictions, easements. I mean, there may be a whole legal can of worms that would be open with that question.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if we would be able to answer that without feeling like the more detailed review of the pendants.
Right, so we're just, I thought of that because when Pat asked about how the occupants of the building would be directed outwards, you probably would just maybe not want to tell them to go N. There's M, there's Orchard, there's L.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a fair point that we can incorporate with the rules and regulations and the education that's occurring with the new residents.
I believe the N Street isn't the hotel. I think that's the...
Is that
the
hospital?
It's the building behind it.
It's the building behind it.
Call them.
I'll have to Google it.
And just to respond to Pat's one question about the emergency vehicle turning around the building, my understanding is that RGS has performed those studies and that it will comply, it will be able to comply with all those turning radius for the emergency vehicles during land development. We'll have to demonstrate that we comply with that to the township engineer, the satisfaction of the township engineer. But my understanding is that, yes, we do comply with those turning radiuses.
And just one more, Mr. Mott. At L Street, was there any thought that went into recommending right in, right out only? Not for certain periods of time during the day, but right in, right out only.
There was conversations about that. I think even the applicant was willing to consider that, but it has impacts on properties not under this developer's control. So that would impact Duck Donut access. The retail is associated with Hershey Plaza, with the parking that's behind it. So perhaps in an ideal world, you would consider that. But we're trying to balance the most pressing operational and safety issues while not impacting those other property owners unduly. So that's why we didn't recommend that.
Anything else from the board? Chuck, Eric, any questions or comments?
I have none, so I'll turn it over here. Just a few comments or maybe clarifications. And you reviewed our comment letter. One of the items we had some concern with was the levels of service. I think on an overall basis, they're maintained very similar to what they are without development. But with the addition of site traffic, I think before we had the left turn restriction at L Street, there was a level of service deterioration projected along L Street. That's obviously rectified by restricting left turns there, but then they dump down. Where do you see those left turns being redirected to, or how are those people that maybe are currently turning left at L Street or planning where that would be turning left in their development on L Street?
There are very few today that are making that left turn during the PMP, I think just because it's so difficult to do. What we would anticipate is those few, and I can look up the specific numbers, but I believe it was under 10 over the course of an hour trying to make a left turn. I think, particularly if M Street's converted to one-way southbound towards 422, we most likely would go down to that location and make a left. They have N as an option, although the ownership is debatable. And then Orchard has the feel, it's the first feel like a real intersection. You have left turn lanes, you've got stamped crosswalks, those sorts of things. We think ultimately it's going to be spread out over those. Maybe people go to M Street predominantly because it's closest, but if they're experiencing delay or queues, they'll learn to go down to Orchard Street and make the left turn there.
And I think similarly, those intersections, MN and Orchard,
maybe level service C on the side street now, and to drop to either level service E or F with the development. Again, overall, still in good shape. Sounds like maybe you did some gap studies.
We did. So your comment indicated looking at those movements in addition to the overall. It's inevitable when you add traffic to a side street with this volume, you're going to have an increase in delay. So that's where you look at, are there adequate gaps? We'll have to prove this to Eric when we resubmit, but we did do gap studies at M Street, N Street, and Orchard, wherever there's a level of service on the side street below D, and we found that there were adequate gaps.
The thought that traffic may cut through the Rite Aid parking lot instead of going down to M or N, or there may be impacts to their business?
Possibly, although I would say, particularly with the condition that's there today, I would think you would be seeing that today, and the volumes that we saw going out of the driveways right into 422 are lower than what IT would predict. So our conclusion is there aren't that many people that are doing it today. If there aren't that many people doing it today, we don't expect that there'll be a significant increase in that in the project.
I guess the question is, if there's turn restrictions enacted, that would be the first access to get to be able to make a left instead of going to M or N.
When we had done the queue observation, it backs up to the Rite Aid driveway. Sometimes it backs up to end. It feels like the further you go away from the signal, the less likely you're going to have a queue blocking it. So there could be. People can do some wacky things, but I think the fact that the further west you get, the less likely you are to encounter a queue may drive something.
And levels of service I know
there's some individual movements that have delays, but generally they probably indicate that things operate better there than maybe they really do. And I think there's other stuff going on with blockages of people waiting to turn left at other locations and driveways along that are backing up traffic on 422, maybe spill through from other signals.
When signals are backing up from one signal to the next, that is not reflected in the level of service and queue analysis, correct?
Correct.
Is there any simulations done or some other way to calibrate the model to try to better model what's really happening out there?
There is. Eric's comment and request that there's various methodologies to evaluate how long a stack of cars will extend. We've used the two methodologies that PennDOT most often requires. There's a third that Eric asked to take a look at that we're going to do as part of our resubmission and provide to you. Conclusions with the queue results are similar. There's certainly, as similar to the level of service, there certainly are some areas, as I'm sure the board has experienced, where you have queues stacking past signals or intersections, and it becomes a function of how significant of an increase do you cause to an already deficient queue. And I think what our report will ultimately conclude is that those increases to already deficient queues are relatively small.
And last question. There's obviously a concern about pedestrian safety. We talked about it already. First, is sidewalk proposed the entire length of First Street along the north side? It seems like some of the sketches show it just on your frontage. Is that going to continue all the way between Hiddenstill and Duck Donuts?
I believe, my understanding is the intent is consistently to provide sidewalk consistently from Elk Street all the way down to Orchard, across the Winters property, across Hiddenstill, all the way there. There are property owner coordination that will have to occur with the right-of-way easement, certainly, but the intent is for a consistent sidewalk for that stretch.
Is that sort of traffic and pedestrian congestion potentially walking in the street?
I agree.
Concern there. And then that sidewalk would connect all the way down to the 422 sidewalk system.
That's the intent, yes.
And just to clarify, I believe that we do have letters from those property owners that generally express support for the extending of the sidewalk there. Sorry, that is in the works, and that will be hashed out more as we go through land development.
That's all that I have.
I have one or two more. The one way, going in from First Street and wrapping around the building all the way around, did you look at making that two-way and making it two-way improve the circulation and or safety associated with the vehicular flow?
The layout specifically was developed by RGS, not by TPD, but we did review the circulation, and I think because it's being used by shuttles, the intent was to have fewer conflicts. That's why it's one way. So if you have one way, there's fewer conflicts as you're circulating around the building. So it doesn't appear to be a need from a capacity standpoint to have two ways, and then the one-way circulation, particularly just being used by shuttles, is more appropriate and leads to fewer conflicts on site.
And then again, just to be clear, if the township were not to consider the right in, right out on L Street, the widening of First Street, the one way for M Street, would that have any negative impact on the levels of service depicted on Table 1 of A5, Tab 9?
Yes, it would have an impact that we would have to evaluate because we assume no left turns from L Street onto 422. From a practical standpoint, though, if the township decides that that's the direction that it would go, I don't think it would have a practical impact because I think people would end up doing what they're already doing, which is mostly turning right off of the
street. But the level of service, would that degrade the level of service?
It would, yes.
So at 422 and L Street, if the township wouldn't proceed with that recommendation, what do you know what the level of service would end up being?
We would have
to. It looks like right now it's an A.
I'd have to dig it further into the report to see specifically what it was. Actually, I can do that. So this would be page 18 of, I don't know what it is.
Tab 9, A5, tab 9.
We show if it's not implemented, Mr. Armstrong, it's a C, turning left from L Street under 422. It's a C in the without development condition that would drop to an E of 47 seconds in the with development condition.
Anything else from the board? Anything else? Mr. or Mrs. Leonard, do you have any questions of this witness?
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
Zach, do you have any follow-up?
I think the only follow-up question I have is when Mr. Armstrong was going through the different uses that you applied from the ITE, that was all done in coordination with township staff, correct?
It was.
So
yes.
You ran that by them, and they generally agreed with the assumption that you were making and how you were performing or how you were intending to perform the study?
That's correct.
Any other questions?
I do have, and I don't know if Mr. Watt is the correct individual to answer this, but L Street, where the proposed sidewalk is right, the proposed sidewalk along L Street on the opposite side of Duck Donuts. Where's the ownership of that piece? If Mr. Malat knows, he can, I don't find with him test. I don't know. I don't know if we covered that in any of our hearings.
I don't know the intricate details. I think there's some complexity, but my understanding is the applicant owns this piece.
I believe that's one of the tax parcels.
He's correct. That's a separate tax parcel.
So Mr. Gall has already been sworn in. Mr. Gall, are you familiar with that piece along L Street?
Yes.
And it's your understanding that the applicant owns that strip?
Absolutely.
Where the sidewalk is proposed?
Yes.
And that if there is a sidewalk or any other landscaping or improvements are installed there, that the applicant, property owner, would be responsible for the maintenance associated with it?
That's our understanding, yes.
That's all. I'm sorry, Zach, did you have any additional questions?
I have no additional questions. No more questions for Mr. Malat. We would rest our case, and I would just keep moving through the admission of our exhibits.
Any objections to this witness letter?
No.
Okay. With that, I think we can accept the exhibits as entered. Any other witnesses, Zach?
I have no further witnesses.
Are you arrested?
Yes.
Okay. I believe everyone, is it fair to say everyone behind you is with your entourage? Is that?
Usually there are many more. But.
So there are some individuals on the side. Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, so the applicant has rested. My question to you is, do you have any evidence? Do you want to testify with respect to the hearing and the application at this point?
Not at this point.
Not at this point.
Okay. So with that, I think if the board wants to open it up for any public comment, what we'll do for public comment is we'll take statements or narratives or whatever you want to provide. I'm suspecting, Mr. and Mrs. Leonard, you may want to provide some type of a statement at this point. Or if I'm wrong, that's fine.
I think I the only thing that we would like to add to this.
Are you testifying or just?
I'm not testifying. Commenting.
Yeah, just name an address.
Diane Leonard, property owner, 337 West Chocolate Avenue. We've been in communication with the parties, and there are some questions, obviously, that have been raised with regard to sidewalks and such, and we're working with them to try to see the concerns with the address. We needed to stay that since we've been here throughout. Thank you.
Do you want to share with the board the sidewalks that you're concerned with? Or?
Just the sidewalks coming across the property, the widening of the alley, and what the potential impact could be in relationship to the operation of our business and as a property owner as well.
Any other public comment? All right, seeing as no one else has come forward, we'll close the public comment session. That will conclude this conditional use hearing. So at this point, there's no further action for the board to take this evening. I think we have 45 days to render a decision.
Right, so this hearing is closed. This board has 45 days to issue a written decision. Whether or not it will take that long, I don't know, but it'll probably be on one of the board's agendas for consideration and probably sometime in October. But until then, I don't anticipate the board deliberating to issue a written or a verbal decision tonight. I think we're going to take all of this information and testimony under advisement, consider it, and at some point in the near future, there will be a written decision. Okay?
So with that, we will take a motion from the board. For adjournment.
Second.
Moved by Mrs. Nunn. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Zamuda. All in favor for adjournment, please vote aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. This hearing is adjourned.